Welcome to From the Heart with me, Dawn Lister, and my guest today, returning visitor, Kate Codrington, author of Second Spring. Here's the book for those of you that are watching this on the video. Second Spring, the Self-Care Guide to the Menopause, which has become my Bible and many of my clients' Bibles who are also going through peri and are in menopause. Welcome, Kate. It's so wonderful and kind of you to come back and talk again. When you were on last time, we had so many lovely comments and shares and messages from people who really found value in the things that you had to say. So it's very kind of you to come back.
Oh, well, I really enjoy talking to you and to bringing reassurance and compassion and kindness to this hot topic. We're talking about symptoms today.
Oh my gosh, no. There are so many. I wonder how many of our listeners have done what I've done, which is in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, get your phone out and Google your symptoms.
Oh, don't do that. Don't do it. Oh my god,
I've got Alzheimer's, cancer, a brain tumor, motor neurons disease. I've everything. I now have health anxiety. Oh, it's ridiculous. I mean, I can laugh, but in those dark moments when your symptoms just seem so overwhelming, it feels like this can't be menopause. Don't be ridiculous. Is that a common thing you hear?
Well, I'm really, yeah. Okay. Step one: don't have your phone by your bed.
No, you're right. I shouldn't.
But that's something yes, it is common. You know, it's our lovely devices give us the gift of connection, but they also give us the gift of disconnect from ourselves and from what's actually happening. And if there's one thing I really would guard against, and that's overthinking.
Yeah.
Because it makes it all possible, because in two clicks on my phone, I can see 50 different possible solutions to whatever is ailing me in that moment. You know, there'll be somebody telling me that it's about my histamine levels, and somebody telling me about my childhood trauma, and somebody else telling me about that it's that I've eaten too much broccoli, or that I need orthotics, or I need a little gadget to hold, an electric gadget to hold at night that will make me sleep. And then, you know, like everything is like comes at us like this. Are we swearing? Is it a swearing?
Swear.
Okay, it comes at me like a fucking tidal wave. Oh, it's true, you know, and of course, and that instantly disconnects me from myself, from what is actually happening with me in the moment. I've been thinking about that a lot this morning when I've been reflecting on what I'd like to contribute through from the heart this conversation, and that I'm just like the antidote to overthinking.
Thank you for that. I think that's a really valuable two things. First one, don't have your phone by the bed. I got into a very bad habit, and weirdly, we spoke about this on the previous episode with Mara, who we interviewed, and I interviewed, and I was saying I got into the habit because I started downloading yoga nidras and listening to them in the night when I couldn't sleep, and it really helps. But the downside to that is I also have a phone by my bed that's going ping ping ping, and the minute I open my eyes, there's all these messages, and I've kind of set the intention to leave the phone in the other room, but I haven't actually done it yet because I keep forgetting.
Yeah, I mean, I think I get that, because I have that dilemma too. And you can set, phones are smart. You can set your phone to go into like nighttime or quiet time or something or other time. You can turn off your internet connection. You can have, I mean, somewhere in your house, there's probably I've forgotten what they're called. Little square box with music inside it. Oh, I know, it's a Walkman. our Walkman, like an Apple Walkman.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great idea. Yes, there will be, won't there?
You know, there'll be other devices that you can stick a Nidra on.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And actually for...
iPod, got it.
iPod, that's it. And for people that are listening, you know, if you don't know what yoga nidra is, I would say, well, I'll let Kate explain what they are, but also to say that she has some available on her website you can listen to. And I really, it was a game changer for me taking up yoga nidra. It really turned my energy levels on their head. I mean, I'm not where I should be, or not should be, not where I'd like to be, but so much better. I don't now crash in the way I did because I practiced Nidra. Maybe you could say a few words about what Nidra is and what you offer with in terms of...
Yeah, well, Nidra saved my ass through perimenopause completely too. And it's meditation for people who don't like meditation. It's an excuse to rest and feel like you're doing something healing and spiritual when actually you're lying down and having a nap. It's very, very delicious. It's a guided meditation that has a very specific sequence. It's very structured in a very specific sequence. And the effect of that sequence is to change your brainwaves into a more meditative, towards a more meditative state. Mm-hmm. And within that meditative state, you are then open to suggestions like, it's safe, I can rest. And who was it? Somebody? Oh, it'll come to me later who this was. But I was listening to somebody and she said that we have been programmed, our minds have been programmed to believe that we can, it is never safe to turn off. We always have to be on. Mm-hmm. We always have to be on it. Mm-hmm. And it's never safe to turn off. So Nidra undoes that conditioning, that it is safe to rest and it is safe to do nothing. It's very permissive and gentle. So there are suggestions. You might like to do this, because for some of us, feeling our bodies makes us feel anxious. For some of us, just lying down is too much. You know, when we're suffering from a lot of anxiety, that just that possibility of stopping can be too much. So this is something that you can even use it as you're walking, you know, as a walking meditation, as you're sitting or drawing or doing something else. But you can still receive the benefit of that kind of soothing movement towards a more meditative mindset. And you can fall asleep, and that's fun too. Actually, I have to say, I was telling my partner this. Monday is cleaning day in our house, and I didn't have any pockets for me duster. So I shoved it in my bra strap, okay? And I hadn't forgotten about it, so I was wandering around the house with this duster sticking out my T-shirt. And I lay down for my Nidra, and it was like it was my Nunu.
Oh my god, it was really
soft. So fun. Anyway, there you go, inside of my life. Cuddling up with dusters.
cleaning and Nidra, I'm liking it, and cuddling with dusters. Oh, it's a really nice thing. I mean, I do, on a difficult day I'll do two or three, but on an okay day I'll do one. But I'm currently suffering from raging anxiety, which is not something I've really experienced in life before. I've had bouts of anxiety which were related to an event that was, you should be anxious about, you know, literally there was something going on. But this is anxiety that has come out of nowhere and is crippled me completely. I in my head, I don't feel anxious. Like I don't have that thoughts turning over and over and worrying about something, but my body is like at a 10 out of 10 on the anxiety some days. And I have been like having to cancel everything, even had to cancel clients. I never cancel clients. And I've been trying to, you know, I've been doing more Nidras, and that does take the edge off. And I've had to do things like, you know, where you cuddle something when you're doing a Nidra, that can be really soothing, or put a blanket over my head and kind of make a little tent kind of a little escape into this like peaceful world I need to create for myself. But I kind of went to your book because I was aware that if there's a symptom that's coming up, and let's unpack this a little bit, not necessarily about me, but this process, that it, all right, it's a hormone thing that's happening, but also there's probably something else behind it. So I've been trying to stay in a very curious place about, okay, I'm in a place where I don't even want to leave the house. I feel very tearful and overwhelmed, like I can't be in my own skin. I don't know what this is really about. So I went to your book and I was kind of trying to unpack a little bit about what was going on for me. And you know, I think I'm in that separation phase, you know, where I'm like going, this isn't working for you anymore, the way you have your life set up. And unconsciously, you know that, but you're not doing what you need to do. So something's got to change. And when I came to that understanding, I could feel the resistance to the change. I don't like resistance. It's not my I'm currently in the state where it's not my friend today. I want to carry on as if I was still pre-pandemic, not in my perimenopause, juggling 100 million balls and being superwoman. And I can't do it anymore. And I'm in a bad mood about the whole thing. I know surrender's got to happen, but it's really difficult. It's so hard. But you say, and I've got on a little post-it note here, and I wrote it down at the beginning of our, before we started, if it's not messy, you're not doing it right. So I'm in a messy phase. So I'm doing it right. Clearly, yeah. I'm doing it right. But, you know, all joking aside, I'm sure this is an experience that lots of our menopausal people who are listening will, or perimenopausal people will relate to. What would you say about, you know, anxiety generally?
Well, listening to you talk, and I have been thinking about this and noticing the way people talk about anxiety in this particular phase of perimenopause. And just to say, just to give people a heads up who maybe don't know what separation is, that's the bit that hurts. That's the bit when you start to feel itchy and my life, this is, I do not like the way my body is, and I do whatever it's acting out, and I do not like these people around me, and I do not like my life, and everything is driving me mad. That is the separation phase. And I do wonder whether a lot of these symptoms, anxiety included, is the body's response, because it wants to fight back. Like if your external circumstances are not suiting your needs, there's going to be a lot of anger. Is this video partly?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, good. So you want to punch those motherfuckers. It's like you want to get into, you know, we're feeling aggressive and angry, and there's a lot of agitate, or, you know, that might be, you know, not out of your consciousness, but there's a lot of agitation. Mm. It's a lot of scratchiness, a lot of irritation around. And what if the sweating or the anxiety was that really true impulse to go, this isn't fucking suiting me. How dare life be like this? Mm. And that is, as far as I'm concerned, is an absolutely legitimate response. Mm. But of course, it's not logical, and it doesn't fit with our commitments. It doesn't fit with earning a living. It doesn't fit with caring for the people around us. It doesn't fit with who we think we are, and we're not very nice. So, you know, we've all been socialized to be terribly nice and compliant and helpful and loving and, you know, sacrificial and putting ourselves first. And, you know, that's the how we think is nice. So the difficulty is allowing. No, the difficulty is not allowing that expression.
Yeah.
So I think also, you know, anxiety also is a sort of, sometimes, not always, and this is a bit simplistic, but it can be like a suppressed fight branch of the nervous system.
Mm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It really does. And I think, as you said, that's the word, we're bred to be nice. You know, especially as people who identify as women, we're bred to be a very specific way, soft and kind and always putting everybody's needs first. Mm. That's not to say that some men don't do that, but that's not how society expects them to be. There's a huge expectation that that's who we are. And I think for me, as I started to unpick the anxiety, and I've done a lot of sitting with it, it's been torture. If I could have unzipped my body and run off like a little alien, I would have done. I would have crawled under a bush. I've spent a lot of time sitting on the step outside my cabin where there's a couple of little trees and the shade, just trying to calm myself and like hold the tree and just go, it's not fair, I don't like this. But as I unpicked it, all the stuff that I've been doing for everybody else forever, it's like, and I keep thinking, oh, where, what about me? You know, what about me? What do I want now? You know, not that I resent what I did in the past. You bring up your family, you run a business, you do what you do. But what about me now? And I think, and I've expressed that to the children and to my husband. I keep saying, you know, what about me? I said, I've got to, and they kind of look at me like I'm a bit mental. What do you mean, what about you? Like, well, what about me? Like, you're all adults now. I can't always do everything for everybody. I need to reclaim who I am. And then there's some grieving maybe, isn't there, around that. Well, look at all these past 30 years. Well, I've been bringing up a family and running a business, looking after clients, not looking after me and what I like. And I bet you, as people are listening to this, there's going to be a lot of people who will say the same thing. Is grieving and that rediscovering the stuff you've left behind a common theme, would you say?
Oh God, yes. Because once you see that, and that, what about me? What about me? You know, there's going to be a lot of different feeling around that, and the grief is such an important part, because there's that kind of sadness and that kind of love and compassion towards all those years that we haven't been able to put ourselves first. We haven't been able to choose that, and that's a really important part. And along with many other feelings, so there may be rage as well, there may be shame around that. You know, I should have, or if only, and sort of rage against societal restrictions, and you know, marginalized, if you're in a marginalized community, even more. I mean, there's a lot to be angry about. Yeah. What about me, and what about my community?
Yeah.
It's been shut out, and this commonly will all come up. And I generally, what I've seen in my professional life is that the rage comes first, and then the grief sits underneath, and then the mourning and the sadness and the loss sit underneath that. And also, I'd really like to salute you for your courage in sitting with this stuff, because it's not easy. It's a really hard thing to do. And, you know, our natural humanness makes us move away from pain. Oh, that's pain. Let's go over here, you know.
Yeah.
So to stay with it is what I encourage everybody to do, to make connection, to get curious. All the stuff that you're doing is, it's absolutely the work. That's exactly where you need to be. And it takes enormous courage to do that. So I'm saluting you all.
Thank you. It is hard, but your book has helped, actually, and years of therapy, obviously, but the book really did help me to see this as a rite of passage that I could work through, and something that it was going to be difficult, but that there was many gifts inside. And I know that whenever I've done the hard work in my life, I've been grateful for it afterwards, maybe not during, but afterwards. So if people who are listening are having these experiences, and you spoke about making that connection, you know, so they're having a symptom, anxiety or whatever it is that's coming up, what could you say more about what you mean? Because not everybody might come from the background where they understand how to sit with something.
I think that's a great question and really important. And also, we all do it differently. Everybody has a different way of doing it. So, and I think this you know, this kind of addresses, I'd like to kind of address this by talking about the coming from it, from the overthinking to the place of overthinking. I'm just assuming that everybody's overthinking, just like me, because, you know, we have Google and we have Instagram. And so it is Susan Weed, that's right, is a venerable American herbalist for women's issues. And she has this sort of table of intervention, and the first thing you do is nothing. And what she means by that is when you have a symptom or a condition or something that comes up or something that's troubling you, you do less, which probably means saying no to some stuff. So you have to edit some stuff out of your life or defer it or reschedule it or do something with it. Rest more. And pay attention to what's happening. So that means that you talked about sitting on your step under the shade of the trees, which sounds very nice. It means finding some place in your life. It might be on the sofa. It might be sitting on the loo for some people. I don't know, some sort of place that feels safe enough so that you can feel into your body. So if it's an anxiety thing, that might be daring to feel into the beating of your heart. So daring to feel the edges of how quickly that heart is beating and what that is actually like inside your body. And you can, I would strongly recommend that we pendulate. It's a fancy word, isn't it? That you go in and out of the experience so that it's manageable. I'm not suggesting that you go into the horrible, don't go into the pit of hell without a fire extinguisher and some mates, you know. Go in, feel it a bit, and then come out and go, okay, so how was that? So that you're going into, oh, well, the edge of that, I'm just making stuff up here, but the edge of, I can feel my heart here and it feels very hot in the center and that heat kind of extends out into my collarbone. So can I, where is the edge of that feeling in my heart? Is it around my collarbone? And it kind of goes around to my nipple and there's a bit, it's kind of above my solar plexus. And okay, so it's that space in my chest. And I'm like, okay, so it's that space in my chest and I might put my hands on it, maybe if that felt nice. And then I can let go of that and go, oh, well, that was that. That feels that. And then already that makes it, that cuts out all the, I'm having a heart attack, I have dementia, how am I going to get there? I have to go and pick up blah, blah from thing. And then there's this, you know, there's that, oh, so there's this shape sensation in my chest right now. And it brings us back into there is only this moment, and it brings us back into the somatic reality of where we are right now. And that is one way of doing it. And you know, some people will have more facility to feel sensation in their body than others. For other people, it might be the sense of coming into connection might be, I can feel my hands. I can feel the texture of my fingers on my palm right now. And I can feel the feeling of my socks underneath my toes. And then go off. And then come back. And then I can feel, oh yes, I can still feel my hands. Or I can feel, so this is a lovely one, I can feel the warmth of my mug, which is so comforting. And that's coming it from the senses, but it's still in connection with yourself. And sometimes that can be enough. And what you're looking for is to, and it, you kind of said it with the nidra when you were reporting about what you're currently experiencing, the nidra, it brings down the charge enough, a little bit, to give you a bit more wiggle room. And when you can reduce the charge a bit, then you can think more clearly and then you can act with more agency in your situation. But first, we have to do nothing. in order to do that.
And that's really hard, isn't it, for people? Because I don't know many women who've ever really done nothing. We've all been so busy doing for everybody and trying to kind of make sure everybody's happy and everybody's okay, that to stop and do nothing in itself can feel quite overwhelming.
Okay, but for 30 seconds, can you imagine, can you manage 30 seconds?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Can you manage one exhale? Yeah. You can do it in one exhale into your heart.
Just a nice pause. Yeah.
And that's, you know, it has to be manageable because, I mean, I know what you're saying. I get what you're saying. And it is really hard. But actually, we are taking time for ourselves all the time. It's just that we're not really focusing on us. We like, oh, fucking hell, and we have a little scroll.
Yeah.
We have a cup of tea with your friends. So we are taking time for ourselves. But it tends not to be mindful.
No. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so when you do step into that mindful world of that experience of being in the moment, it's fascinating the stuff that comes up for you.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be long. It doesn't, you know, I have this, my thing is creativity, and I constantly have this fantasy of I am only allowed to be a creative person if I create a whole day where I waft around in big silk scarves and like a butterfly and noting down marvelous, like, you know, I mean, that's never gonna happen. Never. I have a business, I have a family, I have, like, you know, insanity around me. So my commitment is to, you know, 10 minutes I can give these many projects, one of these many projects, 10 minutes a day, and that's enough to keep my pot boiling, you know.
Yeah.
And it's the same with self-care. It can be, it has to be a sort of, it has to be a doable commitment. And if it's 30 seconds, then that's really fine. It's 30 seconds.
I was just, as you were saying that, I was just thinking about, that's a really typical outlook, isn't it? It's that black or white, isn't it? I'm recording in my art studio. I'm very, very fortunate. I wrote in my blog for my introduction to this episode, at the end of it, I'm in that place in my life where I can afford to buy an art studio, but I can't afford the time to be in it. which when I wrote it made me so cross with myself, because we actually built it for me to work in, and then in the end I didn't need to because the premises worked out and it was fine. So I said, well, I'll have an art studio then, and I just moved, and it's beautiful, it's paints and collage and knitting and easels, and but I rarely come in, but when I wrote that, it really struck me how little I was giving to myself. This thing that I love, the reason I did it is because as a child I always drew. I was always drawing and sticking and doing things like that, and I probably would have loved to have gone to art college, but, you know, working class family, had to get a job very young, it was never going to happen for me. It doesn't matter, I can still create, and as you say, 10 minutes a day. So what I've done is I've taken into the home pads and pencils, so they're on the tables around the house, so if I sit down I can doodle. And I guess everybody will have their thing, won't they? And it might be, you know, pruning in the garden or making a cake or something, because creativity feels important. Would you agree?
I would like to define what I mean by creativity, and I'd really be interested in your take as well. I think creativity is any kind of expression.
Yeah.
Any kind of expression. So it might be having a conversation with somebody, and that is a creative act. Mm. You know, again, we can kind of fall into this ideal of you know, being at the easel with a beret. And that's the only kind of creativity, and anything else we do is not, and therefore not worthy and less than. But making a cake is a huge act of creativity. showing up for your partner, your kids, is a huge act of creativity. And you know, if you get to doodle, then that's an act of creativity too. So there's no one medium that is better than another. You know, like oil, with oil, you know, there's this kind of thing with oil paint at the top, and kind of digital art at the bottom, that we kind of, you know, that is a very old school traditional thing that we have in our mind. And everybody else is a civilian. The artist and civilian. But that's not the case. The nature of being human is to be creative.
Yeah.
And that's how I think of creativity. And what I think about my creative work is that natural life force that we all have, that we all want, that natural desire to express, but it's channeled in a particular way.
Yeah.
So my thing at the moment is stitching the story of friendships into people's clothes.
Oh.
Which is it's just heart busting.
Sounds wonderful.
It is wonderful.
Do they give you their clothes and you stitch something into them?
Yes, it's called the Threads of Friendship. And I have a very dear friend, and I chose a garment that reminds me very much of her. And I wrote some words about our friendship, and I stitched it into the shirt. It's a white shirt, and I stitched it so the words spiral around us, around the body of the shirt, literally around the arms and around the waist of the shirt. And I gave it to her. It was very, very emotional. And then she chose a close friend of hers that she wanted to tell the story of their friendship, and she gave me a garment and her words, which I then stitched. And that friend, I think it's online. You can see it online. And it's a hedgehog. The words, it's like concrete poetry, so the words take the form of a hedgehog, because she's really into hedgehogs.
Wow.
And then she gave that to her friend, and I think I'm on about the fifth or sixth garment.
And where could someone see that? Is that
on my website? It's called my website's katecodrington.co.uk, and there's a link there for Threads of Friendship, it's called. So my vision is that there's these threads of connection kind of wrap us around the world, because that's what I'm into at the moment.
So it sounds incredible. I'm going to have a look. And as you say, connection, I'm really resonating with that. A connection is so important. It's the thing that we all need to thrive. We need connection. We need a community, whether that be one or many people around us, to listen and to see us and to hold us and to allow us to be and to share. And without that, then our mood really drops. You know, there's a lot of research to say that actually what's more beneficial than antidepressants, which is a whole other story, is connection.
Yeah.
Actually having, do you remember that film, Crocodile Dundee, 100 years ago? I remember a scene in it where he said to his friend, someone said to him, "Do you have a therapist?" And he went, "What do you mean a therapist? You're not getting any mates to talk to." And I think that's so true. That's not, I'm a therapist, so let's not, you know, I'm not saying we aren't needed and it's not helpful. Of course it is. But actually, connection is so important, isn't it?
Yeah. And the lack of connection will make us ill. And I think that, you know, that we are with perimenopause, we're in a sort of divide and rule situation where we have been feeling very alone. You know, I'm going mad. Everybody else is getting along fine with their lives and holding it all together, and I'm falling apart. Nobody else has this particular collection of symptoms. And we are, the panic and the fear and the masking that we do, the endless masking that we do, just continues and gets worse and worse and is more and more exhausting, until we can be in connection with other people in the same situation, and we go, actually, I'm not alone. And all these other people in perimenopause also want to run for the hills.
Yeah.
They all want to run away and burn their houses down. And so maybe I'm not the freak that I thought I was. Yeah. Maybe I'm not, maybe I don't need to feel so much shame about these difficult feelings that I have about the people around me.
Yeah.
And then, and then it's like, oh, okay, so we can exhale and our nervous systems regulate and we can be in connection and that. And then we're back into symptoms now, whatever pain you're experiencing becomes bearable, we can adapt to it, we can feel more compassionate towards it, and we can ask, crucially, so what does this symptom need? What is it asking for here? Mm-hmm. And it might want to go kickboxing, or it might want to lie down, but you won't know until you actually come back into connection and kind of ask it and at least explore.
Mm.
Is it this? Oh no, that made it feel worse. So maybe that then. Okay.
There's a huge push I'm noticing. I mean, it's great that people are talking about it. It's wonderful that celebrities and stuff are sharing their experience and sort of pushing for it to become talked about. But there does feel like there's a push for you to stay as you were before. Like, I'm not going to let the menopause beat me.
Mm.
You know, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z and use this cream and take this tablet and I'm going to look just as good as I did before and my life is going to be the same. I'm seeing a lot of that, and that feels really jarring to me, because I haven't got the energy or the desire to stay as I was before, because when I look back I'm like, well, that was ridiculous what I've been doing. This was all ridiculous, far too much, far too and not a good example for my kids either, you know, to be so overworked and stretched and putting myself on this little shelf in the corner where you're the last person that gets fed and the last person that's taken care of, even though I knew better. So that worries me a little bit, that whole dialogue that's going on, you know, about trying to stay the same, when actually menopause is a change, isn't it? It's a transition into hopefully what will be a much more powerful and free time in our life.
There's so much there. And I think, you know, if it's somebody, if you're looking at a celebrity who is saying this, then that is their PR vehicle. You know, we have to remember that it's not straightforward, and what we're reading in magazines and what we're seeing on social media that's their PR, because their livelihood depends on them looking perky and lovely and nothing's going to change me, because we need celebrities to be the same all the time. We don't want them to get old. We want them to always be 25.
Yeah.
Clearly that's nuts, but that's how they generate their work. And what we're not seeing is their real life. We're not seeing the armies of beauticians, and I can't say it, aestheticians, the people who stick fillers and Botox in their faces, and their personal trainers and the nanny and the personal assistant and the business coaches and that, you know, or the agent, or the, you know, that's like they have whole people.
Mm.
And they are vulnerable and falling apart, because they are, because it's hard. Imagine having to hold all that together and look great and be nice.
No,
that's impossible. So first of all, that's a fallacy. It's always really good to remember that. And perimenopause is asking us to change. And Jane Hardwick Collins says the veil of estrogen has lifted. You know, the benefit of estrogen's decline that's shifting is that we see the world with clearer eyes. We see the injustice. We see what's not working.
Yeah. There's a real... Sorry, I talked over you there. There's a real... when you said that, I was just thinking, that's it. You become angry. And I remember when my first symptom was rage. My first symptom was I stopped sleeping, but I thought that was something else. And then there was the rage. And I remember my husband saying to me, "Who are you? What happened to you? Why are you so angry? Why do you hate everybody?" And I was like, oh my God, I'm turning into some awful cow. because I could feel rage, but actually that's what was happening, was I could see very clearly. And then there comes despair with that. Well, for me there was, because I was like, oh my God, this is too big. I can't fix it. You know, it's all broken. The world's broken. And there was a bit of an existential crisis, which is something I am witnessing in my clinic with clients a lot, particularly women who are coming in very distressed. I mean, I was working with a 75-year-old woman yesterday who was in great distress about the state of the world. And that was, you know, that's what she was holding, was like, it's all broken. And I think that there is that is a symptom, isn't it? That kind of existential crisis, that feeling of deep sadness. What's your thoughts around how we can navigate that?
Oh, Jutal.
Big question. Solve the world problems. Go.
And a wing, bada bong, just like that. You just have to get more mindful and be a bit kinder, and it's all rosy in my world, Dawn.
Oh, yeah, right.
I think that being, you know, it's like undoing the layers, that being with, we dance a dance with that despair. You know, there's the masked, perfectly okay layers. And then as we go underneath, and I agree that many of us are very armored against feeling that despair, that level of despair around the climate emergency, around the injustice, around the extreme right wing movement in this country, in the UK, in this country, and you know, it's not just the UK, and across the world, and how marginalized people are getting shoved further towards the edge and further, you know, really into the poverty in this country. And I think that we all dance a dance with that, you know. And we touch into it and touch out of it. And I don't know the answer to that question, obviously. But what I do know is that we are absolutely hopeless. We can't do anything unless we are resourced. Our first call has to be to resource ourselves so that we are able then to do to make whatever contribution we can in our own way. But if we are in that despair place, and then we are going out and helping other people, or whether maybe you're running a charitable thing, or you're an activist, or whatever you're an artist, or whatever your thing is, you can't do that well or sustainably unless you resource yourself first. And that means like often boring stuff like flossing your teeth. Sorry. It's like, let's ground this. That means like flossing your teeth and going to the dentist, or finding a dentist. Oh my God, let's not even go there. Like, let's just stick with flossing your teeth. Flossing your teeth and eating more greens and having an extra portion of vegetables and maybe resting and maybe settling your mind a bit with something that settles your mind and feeding yourself and being in connection and community and finding some compassion for yourself. And then you will be better able to act in. It has to come down to ourselves.
Yeah. So I completely agree. I think the similarly to the advice that I gave this client myself yesterday was, look around you at what is working. Let's start from a place where we can feed ourselves. Yeah. You know, like, we sat and we looked at the tree out the window and the squirrel and the birds and kind of said, let's bring ourselves into a state of regulation. Because I think in this, obviously this person was menopausal, but I'm speaking about perimenopausal women particularly, we are dysregulated, aren't we, quite a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So we have to kind of put moments, or for me, I've put moments in my day as much as I can where I regulate myself, so I don't, you know, before I could jam pack back to back all day and I would be fine at the end of the day, I could then go and do something else. Mm-hmm. I now need processing time between things, time to think and time to check in with how I am. And also I've learned to go, if I'm not resourced, to cancel things, which I never would have done. I wonder what our listeners are thinking, like, oh my gosh, they're probably maybe feeling some guilt around needing to cancel, or maybe
can you say more about that? I'm going to barge right in there. I'm really interested in hearing more about how you resource yourself to cancel things. Tell me about that.
Gosh, well, I kind of check in with myself before I go anywhere and say, what's it going to cost me to do this? Okay. That's my first question. Because I noticed once I hit perimenopause, I couldn't be in big groups anymore. I just couldn't do it. But sometimes I have to because I'm married, and it's kind to go with your partner to things that they want you to be at occasionally. So now I say to myself, have I got the capacity to go, and what am I going to have to do to get there? So at the beginning, I would have had to have an alcoholic beverage to get myself out the door. And then I decided, well, if I have to do that, I probably shouldn't go. So I asked that question. If I need to give myself a substance to get me there, I'm not going to go. I also make the decision that if I'm not feeling good when I'm there, I'm going to come home, and I let everybody know that's what's going to happen. And if I know there's something coming up, I make sure, and I want to be there, I make sure that I've had some quiet time before I get there so that I have got some inner space. I mean, that's just how I've worked it out for myself. So, and I don't feel guilty about saying no. In fact, I bumped into somebody a couple of days ago and they said, people are talking, you know, and I said, about what? And they're about you, because you never go anywhere. We thought something had happened to you. And I said, yeah, it has. It's called the menopause. And she went, oh, I feel the same, but I just, you know, I just have a drink. And I said, well, I don't want to do that. I said, that's fine, but I don't want to do that. I just don't want to be there. If I need a drink to go, I'm not going to go. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how I've worked it out for myself.
Thank you. I think that's really interesting, really interesting to hear. So there's something about padding, like you're noticing when you need a drink before you go, you're thinking about it before you go. And there's also a lot of permission in there. You're giving yourself permission to cancel, to not stay long if you don't want to. And I would add to that, managing other people's expectations, like the person who's talking about you, who said that people are talking, telling the host, I'm going to come, but I'm only going to stay for a short time. Yeah. So that you set, and also tell who, you know, your partner or whoever you're going with, but I'd love to come with you, but I will only be there for a short time.
You have to. Otherwise, I mean, I look back and I think I've always done it. I think I've always gone to things I didn't want to do, but I just went to them a bit pissed. I mean, really, and I don't really drink anymore. I mean, I don't never drink. I have the odd glass of wine here and there, but I can't. My system doesn't. And that's another thing in menopause. You can't take substances like you used to. I'm very sensitive to so many things now. And the way I'm looking at it, and this is thanks to your book, is that my body's just saying, stop. You've spent years not doing the right things for yourself. Now I'm going to make you, or you're going to break. And I won't break. I refuse. I refuse to break. It's not good for me. It's not good for anybody else. So I'm going into this transition with thoughtfulness and with kindness towards myself, but still bloody awful. I'm not going to pretend it's fun, because it's not. It's very messy. We said at the beginning, we're going to speak about symptoms. We spoke about anxiety and tiredness and this antisocialness, which is quite common, and the rage. What are the other symptoms you might like to mention or share, if any?
You know, I'm going to be really an evil guest.
Go on.
And I'm not going to name symptoms.
Okay.
I think there are very, very many places on the internet where you can get an endless list of symptoms. And you can talk yourself into them, and actually reading lists of symptoms will likely make them worse and make you panic more and overthink more. And instead of talking about different symptoms that you might experience through your midlife, I'd like to reframe that. I am going to reframe that and invite you to think about what you might need to soothe yourself right now. And if you have, for example, if you have an aching joint, then what might that aching joint need right now? how could you really be compassionate and kind towards that joint? And I bet anybody listening to that with an achy joint will instantly know what the joint needs. And then in the second instant, we'll say, but I can't give myself that. Like, we kind of know it means, well, it needs a bit of rest and a bit more mindful exercise or something along those lines, and probably a bit less sugar or a bit less booze, a bit less white bread, a bit more, you know, something a bit more nourishing in our system. And it's, oh, but I can't do that because, and I have to blah. So how can you give yourself a little bit of what you need? You know, it's like that 30 second pause. How can you give yourself even a tiny bit of that? Because the more we talk about how ill we are and how this terrible condition, the worse it gets. Mm. And the more that we're sort of squashing down what we actually need, which is peace. If we are in a state of transformation, as I believe we are in perimenopause, then what we need for transformation is peace and time and space, mm. and less stuff and more nourishment to feed this revolution that is going on inside of us. We don't need more information about how ill we are. And makes me want to tear my hair out, because that's what's with this new awareness and this new dialogue and narrative about menopause. That's what's happening. We're being told that we are sick, that we're deficient, and I think that's why you the celebrities that you're talking about are, you know, I'm going to carry on as before and take the pill and blah blah blah, because the alternative is to be deficient. Mm. But actually it's a revolution.
It really is, and it does feel like that. And I think also there's a revolution around, and I think it's something to do with our generation, potentially. I'm not going to lie down and die because I don't look 25. I just refuse. Like, I've got a lot to bring to the table. I haven't got the energy to give it yet. I'm too tired because I'm transforming. But I know that when I come out the other side, all the wisdom that I've gleaned over the years will be a gift. And I don't know what that will look like or how I'm going to share it. And I have a suspicion it won't be how I've done it already. I think it will look quite different. I'm quite excited about that. But I think that's the thing. Our generation of women aren't going to become invisible.
No.
Excuse. I know that a lot of women, you know, my mother's generation and that generation, their life ended and they came into menopause. You know, they stopped working, or, you know, they stopped going out, they started dressing differently to hide themselves away and become very beige. I can't see any of my friends being prepared to do that.
I have told my daughter, if I ever start wearing pastels, that she can shoot me. That she should shoot me. Take me out now. There's two peach and lemon together. See you, mother. Okay, thanks.
Bye, boy. Oh my God, it's so true. I think now I'm probably braver now about what I wear and how I show up than I ever. I mean, I look back to, you know, being 25 and 30, and, you know, in inverted commas, being, you know, very attractive in terms of my shape, perhaps, but thinking I was hideously fat and horrible. And actually now, huge, much bigger and much softer. But I just think, oh, you're amazing. And I do think that. I don't mean in an egotistical way. There's nothing wrong with having good ego. But just like, you know, look at that body. You give birth to kids. You've worked. You've had all these experiences. Your body's working every day for you. Aren't you amazing? Why shouldn't you celebrate it with some crazy clothes and something, you know, expressing myself the way I want to? And I do believe that women of our age on the whole are going to refuse to sit down and die. We've got far too much to say. We just need a minute to put our words in order, because my words are not very in order.
Yes, we've got too much to say, and we're going to say it all in the wrong order and back to front. very loudly.
Exactly. So that I'll be curious to see what this generation of women does as we step into menopause, because we're very, very powerful. I mean, the Dalai Lama said, didn't he, the world needs more women in government. Yeah. He was right.
Yeah.
He was right.
Yeah.
You had a reading you were going to share. That would be lovely if you would.
Yeah, this is from Second Spring. And yeah, so I'm just going to read it. Okay, don't need to preface it with anything. Understanding how the fluctuations in the body's endocrine system affect you will help you find treatment and practice self-care, as well as reassuring you that you're not going mad. Knowledge is indeed power. I would be cautious, though, not to get lost in overthinking. Frantic Googling about brain flog. That's a symptom. is not going to help you think more clearly, and it will probably raise your anxiety. Splitting body and mind into two separate categories is like reducing an extraordinarily profound system into a Ford Capri. When we do this, we can miss out on the real juice of well-being. Rather than being made up of mechanical bits and bobs, you are comprised of interconnected systems in a dynamic state of flux. As Liz Cook explains in Stalking the Wild Psoas, now is the time to dissolve the old story and inhabit the new paradigm of body as a living process. Your first step in finding help should always be, it should always be, what kindness can I show myself now before anything else happens? There you go.
Thank you.
Wow. Yeah. Where are these beautiful, endlessly creative rivers of creativity, dynamic beings made of stardust and magic and pure sparkle, really? Coming out the stars, spinning around on a planet in the middle of nowhere at a gazillion miles an hour. And how bloody extraordinary is that? And if we think that taking one pill is going to fix us and turn us back into how we used to be at 25, it's like we might have to think about that again.
And I come back again and again to this idea that why should we stay stuck at this age and who's that for? That's a question I always like to ask, and I get my clients to do the same thing. Who's that for? Mm. Like, who benefits by you being stuck at that age? Who benefits by you continuing that behavior? And actually, if we ask ourselves, who benefits by us not having a voice that is clear and free from trying to make everybody else comfortable and seeing through all the shit, who benefits? And do you want to feed that system? I mean, for me, menopause is a political statement. I can't think of any woman that will benefit from me being silent about the abuses that women face and us being pigeonholed into having to look or act a certain age, which is generally in your mid-20s, passive, quiet, and sexually appealing and fertile. You know, that's not good. That's not a role that women want to be playing for the rest of their lives. So I just, when you were reading your passage, I had marked a passage actually that I want you to share very briefly. And it was actually a comment from one of your people that obviously you interviewed for the book, and it was about what we need to do during separation, and the title was Do Less Then Do Less Again, which is definitely my motto now. I do as little as possible, still far too much, but I'm getting there painfully. And the heading is You Will Shed Identities, and Tanya said, I have let go of every role utterly. Some I've dropped, some I do better, and some I have changed so radically that people no longer want to interact with me. I thought, spot on. That's exactly it. We will change. And the question is, are you going to change in a way that works for you or works for everybody else? And I guess let's do the one that works for us.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I get the cold shivers listening to those quotes from people, because I guess because in my community, in the community that I held with Leora Leiboff at Womankind, there are people there navigating perimenopause with all the challenges that you've mentioned that many of us experience. But the frame is one, the lens is one of transformation. The lens is one of perimenopause as a means to growth, as a means to working better, more sustainably, making better change in the world. And that gives those quotes, the way they view the challenges, completely different to a catastrophic failure. It's like, no one is speaking to me and I'm going to do less.
Yeah, thank you. Could you share with our listeners where they can find you and what it is that you offer?
Yes, I would love to. Thank you, Dawn, for the opportunity. I mostly inhabit, my website is a really good place to go. It's katecodrington.co.uk, and through that place you can find this Aladdin's cave of lots of yoga nidras, so you can download them onto your Walkman. Onto your Walkman by Apple, which I think I'm going to trademark that. And there are workshops there, and there are like 10 tons of articles, and there's a podcast called Life and Inside Job. All the episodes are there, and there's a lot of inspiration from professionals who help with perimenopause, who with giving information, but also really soulful, beautiful, lovely stories with amazing humans about how they navigate the world, which is, I find, incredibly tender and delicious. So there's it's a huge amount of stuff there, which is, most of it's free. You can just get your hands on. And then the other ways that I offer services, I do one-to-one sessions with people, and I have a menopause doula service. So that's the idea is that you manage your budget, you pay monthly, so you manage your budget, so you know exactly how much is coming out of your bank account every month. And I'm kind of on your team. I'm like here, and you get like, I don't know, it's like 500 minutes about, more or less, of time in big sessions or shorter sessions, whatever you want, and email contact in between. So, you know, you can WhatsApp me and go, Kate, this happened. And I go, it's okay. Yes. Remember that thing you did? You could do it. So I kind of cheerlead. So that's the doula service. What else do I do? There's monthly yoga nidra that happens. There's one tomorrow actually, where we're celebrating our capacity to validate ourselves. I'm getting the cold chills about that one. So all the participants are sending in the words of the different ways they are going to validate themselves, that they are, you know, super creative, or, you know, whatever it is that they want to validate. And then that gets woven into the nidra. So there's this live nidra that connects you with the season, with high summer at the moment, and also whatever it is, your particular thing that you want to hear. There's loads of stuff. But those are the main things, I think.
Wonderful. And I really, as I said earlier, I give your podcast and everything out to people regularly, and I listen to your podcast a lot. I listened to two, one yesterday and one this morning actually, and the one I have currently have brain fog, can't remember anyone's name. I couldn't, took me 10 minutes to say fire engine last week. It's quite, I mean, it is amusing. But one of the ones I listened to yesterday was an Australian lady. Did you interview an Australian lady?
Jane Hardwick Collins.
That's the one. I mean I've listened to loads of them, but I really, really enjoyed her episode. I thought she was like,
she is a firecracker. She's been doing this seasonal women's work for like decades, as long as Alexandra Pope. I mean, like most of her life. And she's postmenopausal, and she's in her 60s now, I think. And she has a gift of absolute clarity.
Yeah, she really does.
She has it. She's like, she speaks with the sword of truth. It's amazing to be around. Really, really, really refreshing.
I loved it. I mean, I loved it so much that I downloaded it because I'm going to listen to it again. I thought she was, and I quite often listen to podcasts when I'm painting. They're such a great thing to kind of channel your creativity while you're listening. So yeah, if you listeners do jump on to Kate's podcast, it's wonderful. It's really, you're going to have such fun listening to those conversations. Thank you so much for making the time to talk to us again. This is such a important topic to discuss, and I feel like when we do this, we're holding each other's hands, all the women are listening.
And I really want, you know, like to remind people that every time that they do something kind for themselves, they take a 30-second pause, or they say no, or they don't turn up to an event, you're giving permission for other women to do the same. It's not just about us, but it's seldom about us, really. But probably, you know, that person you met on the street who said everybody's talking about you, they're probably talking about you, saying, God, if she can do it, maybe I could too. So our self-care isn't only about us. It has a knock-on effect in the world that probably we don't know about.
Yeah, you're so right. You're so right.
Do it for the team.
Do it to, exactly. Do it for the sisterhood.
Yeah.
It's time. It's time to reclaim.
Yep.
To reclaim our voice and our make a nest for ourselves to emerge from. So thank you for coming, and thank you everyone for listening. Please, I'm going to say that annoying thing now. Please leave a review. Please leave us a 5-star review and a comment, because it does help push us up the old rankings in these conversations.
Yeah, it feels awkward asking for that all the time, but then it's the same thing. It does make it more visible, and you never know, somebody really may need to hear that they're okay. And you know, you can click on the star thing, and then somebody might see it and just feel, oh God, I'm okay. Yeah. And that, you know, that's a gift. It's easy.
We've had so many wonderful conversations through these 4 seasons, and this is my first season doing it alone. And it was a bit scary at first to think, oh gosh. But actually, much as I do miss Daniel, although we talk all the time because we're friends, it's been really important as a woman to step up and use my own voice and not need somebody to lean back on. Although it's very nice to have someone to lean back on, but this has felt like quite a nice transition into doing it by myself. So yeah, please do leave a review, leave a comment, share it with your friends. And if there's things that you would like to ask Kate or me, please do leave a little comment and we can think about that. And I'm sure I'll wrestle her back sometime in the future to talk again. Thank you for listening. Everybody have a wonderful day. And if you're in perimenopause, welcome to the club. Enjoy the ride.